This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The UN World Food Programme says it is alarmed at the prospect of running out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in troubled northeastern Nigeria. The crisis does not just affect Nigeria, the nation's top humanitarian official says. It impacts families across the Lake Chad Basin.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. We'll have the full story coming up.
Also, the Diffa region of southwestern Niger is suffering from the devastating effects of the Boko Haram insurgency. Zimbabwe marks 37 years of independence today, and a chilling video circulating on social media shows a horrifying and an alarming campaign of terror in Burundi against opponents of the president's party.
We'll have these details and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The UN World Food Programme says it is alarmed at the prospect of running out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in northeastern Nigeria. The crisis does not just affect Nigeria, the nation's top humanitarian official says. It impacts families across the Lake Chad Basin. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The World Food Programme is sounding the alarm over a severe funding shortfall in Nigeria that could endanger the lives of 4.7 million people affected by hunger in the nation's volatile northeast. The UN agency has received just under 15% of the $416 million it needs for its operations in Nigeria this year. In the next 5 or 6 months, says WFP Acting Regional Communications Officer Elizabeth Bryant, the UN agency needs $200 million to keep feeding Nigeria's hunger-stricken population. Bryant spoke to VOA from Dakar. She says experts predict that the annual lean season, usually the waiting period before the next harvest, could come early this year, as soon as May, after 2 years of failed harvests in the agricultural northeast. And so, she says, the funding needs are urgent.
We need it now so that we can do, for example, when it comes to the hunger season, the lean season I was discussing, that we have food lined up, that we're prepared. And in fact, the food is there. We just need to have the money to be able to buy it and distribute it to people in need.
The agency, she says, has contingency plans, which include reducing rations. She says officials are appealing to donors to act now to prevent the situation from becoming a famine.
At that point, a lot of lives have already been lost. And the other thing is that it costs a lot more financially to react to a famine than to try to avoid one.
Nigeria is one of four nations that are on the brink of famine. Yemen, South Sudan, and Somalia are also facing dire hunger in what UN officials say is the largest humanitarian crisis since the international body's creation. The insecurity and mass displacement caused by the now 7-year Boko Haram conflict in northeastern Nigeria has brought farming to a near halt. Some parts of Borno State have been off-limits to aid workers due to fighting. The Nigerian government's chief humanitarian coordinator, Dr. Ayoade Alakija, told VOA that this is not just a threat to Africa's most populous nation. It's a threat to millions of families in Chad, Niger, and Cameroon who rely on Nigerian agriculture.
Because these people would farm, and they would farm their millet and their maize and their beans, and it would be exported to those other countries, and that was how they got their livelihoods. But also, that was how those countries got their food.
In an op-ed published in the French newspaper Le Monde Friday, the UN Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in Nigeria warned that a suspension of relief efforts in northeastern Nigeria could render the area more vulnerable to the spread of extremism. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Boko Haram insurgency may have started in northeast Nigeria in 2009, but the devastating effects have spread to neighboring countries. One of the places hit hard by attacks, displacement, and an influx of refugees is the Diffa region in southwestern Niger. VOA's Nicolas Pinault is in Diffa. He spoke to Joe DiCapua about current humanitarian conditions there.
The situation has improved a lot. You know, I was in Diffa 2016, and a year after, you can tell that the security has improved, especially because of the international task force targeting Boko Haram members on both sides of the border, both Niger and Nigeria, but also along Lake Chad. And so obviously the security is way better. You still have some attacks from time to time, but overall the general security has improved a lot. And so what you see right now, some refugees, I mean, it's still a tiny fraction of the population, but some refugees trying to go back to Nigeria because the situation has improved. You have about 250,000 refugees and IDP here in the Diffa region. Most of them, you know, they live in camps around Diffa and in Bosso, for example, and along the border with Nigeria. And all of them, they're saying they would like to go back, but right now they're not sure if it's secure in their villages to go back. They're waiting. They say they lack food. You know, international organization, they provide some food assistance. But for the refugees, it's not enough. Many people that I talk to say they are very hungry. They would like some food, especially for the kids. You don't have starvation in this part of Niger. You have some cases of malnutrition, but it's not as serious and severe as it would be, for example, in northern Nigeria.
Have you talked to any UN officials or humanitarian agencies about the humanitarian situation?
Yes, I met with a representative of UNHCR here in Diffa, and he explained to me that right now they covered 90% of the food assistance here in Diffa, which is about 8,000 tons. But overall, the situation is pretty good. That's what he was saying. And now they need to think about the long term and especially how the refugees are going to go back. Because obviously it was a temporary situation since the first attack in Niger on February 2015. And right now many, many communities, you know, have been hit pretty hard by the attacks, and some villages have been destroyed. And right now the UNHCR representative in Diffa was saying that we need to talk about reconstruction, because obviously the refugees, even the IDP in the region, they need to go back in the villages.
What is the security situation like now in Diffa?
As I said, here in Diffa, you have the regional task force, which is mainly the army of Niger, Chad, Nigeria, and you have also people from Cameroon and Benin. You know, they cooperating to fight Boko Haram members all across Lac Chad region. You have the headquarters in N'Djamena, and you have here in Diffa main operation. You have American soldiers too. Officially, they only provide training and intelligence. The same for the French army. You can hear when you travel here and when you live here in Diffa, you can hear the Sukhoi airplanes, air attack airplanes. The Niger army has only two Sukhois, but you can hear them like mostly in the morning because they are targeting some bases in the Lac Chad region, Boko Haram.
And that's VOA's Nicolas Pinot from Diffa, Niger, speaking there to Joe DeCampoa. Parts of South Sudan are experiencing famine, and Somalia, northeast Nigeria and Yemen are at risk of famine as millions face starvation. But why does famine still happen, and why are some countries so unprepared for it? Development experts are looking at ways to break the cycle. Suresh Babu is a senior research fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute, or IFPRI, in Washington. He says there is much to learn from past disasters. I asked him about the causes and consequences of famine and how much of it is man-made.
Famines don't come with a particular cause. It is a combination of several confounding factors that act at a particular point in time. The food system as a whole, if it is not resilient when it receives certain shocks, then it is going to lead to a situation, famine-like conditions, and then when intervention is not there, and full-blown famine is going to be there.
How does one build resilient food systems?
We have been talking about resilience for a while, but no one has analytically been able to get their hands on what are the causes and what are the indicators of resilience. We do have some understanding of the factors that contribute to the resilience of the food system. For example, a resilient food system needs to be developed over time with proper policy intervention. If the policies are failing the food systems over the period, the resilience is weakened. The resilience, in essence, is how the communities or the food system as a whole can bounce back when it receives a shock, like a weather shock, or a conflict-like shock, or environmental degradation, and so on. To give an example, the Ethiopian government in the last 20 years have been able to manage their drought-like conditions without getting into a famine situation because they built their resilience through right type of policies that help the farmers to stay in place and build their productivity, and also the policies that can help the vulnerable groups in terms of social safety nets. The second aspect is building the resilience of the institutions that conduct research on agricultural productivity, land degradation, sustainability of natural resources. That requires continuous intervention. But in the time of conflict, those institutions fall apart.
What role do politics and economics play in where famine develops and how severe that famine will be?
That's a fantastic question, because this is also another area that we have not given adequate attention. Conflict-driven famine that we are seeing currently in Yemen and South Sudan, Somalia and Northeast Nigeria is absolutely a political economy issue. We need to understand who are the actors and players who are coming to this conflict and what interest they have. We can't really stop certain conflict, but at the same time, how can we save lives? How can we build the community so that they don't have to be displaced? And they don't have to be destroying their livelihoods.
So based on what we know and what we don't know, how much famine and drought, in your estimation, can we still expect to see in Africa in the near future? And how much of it can be prevented?
Except for this very war-torn kind of situation and conflict situation where humanitarian aid even cannot go there to support the communities there, for the most part, famines are preventable. We know the causes. When the drought hits, we know how to intervene in terms of humanitarian aid, but also because of the displacement, because of the infrastructure failure, even in urban areas, you are going to see a lot of contamination of water and sanitation issues. And how do we bring in the health along with the food to save lives? And quickly, we need to think about how can we stabilize the community. The basic infrastructure they need to have, and also the innovations in terms of technology, they can we provide quick seeds that they can have some food where they are based. Assessment of the vulnerability. Who is vulnerable, where they are, how can we get the food to them, and how much food can be delivered. And targeting the right type of communities is very important. And we have learned quite a bit about how to do that. But at the same time, we do miscalculate the food availability sometimes. And that's because we do not have the right type of capacity in the national systems. Without waiting for an humanitarian assistance team landing from Geneva or Rome or from London or Washington, and that capacity as a development community we have not built, and we have failed in that over the years. When we do not have the capacity on the ground, then is where the situation gets worse. By the time the international humanitarian team arrives with all the procedures, we are into the famine-like condition. And that happens time and again.
And that was the International Food Policy Research Institute's Suresh Babu speaking to me in Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick, and at 18 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN World Food Programme warns it could run out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in northeast Nigeria. The Diffa region of southwestern Niger is suffering from the devastating effects of the Boko Haram insurgency, and Zimbabwe marks 37 years of independence today amid an economic crisis. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Zimbabwe marked 37 years of independence today. The country's persistent economic problems cast a shadow over the event this year. President Robert Mugabe promised better times ahead. Sebastian Mofu has the story for VOA from Harare.
And to you who are here, I say, long live Zimbabwe. Long live our freedom and independence. Congratulations, and I thank you.
That is a frail-looking Robert Mugabe winding up his speech Tuesday at a stadium in the capital. He addressed more than 50,000 people gathered to mark Zimbabwe's 37 years of independence. In his speech, the president was hopeful that Zimbabwe's moribund agriculture-based economy will pick up thanks to above-average rainfall in the 2016-2017 growing season. The UN says about 4 million people in Zimbabwe remain dependent on food aid after a drought over the previous two growing seasons. Mugabe said Zimbabwe would have a, quote, bumper harvest, unquote, this year. He sought to show our support.
Comrades and friends, as we today celebrate our hard-won independence, I wish to urge you to remain vigilant. The enemy is ever ready to pounce on any signs of laxity and weakness on our part. We celebrate as a vigilant nation, even as we prepare for our economic general development. What we have done in the past to bring about unity is not enough.
Mugabe has led Zimbabwe since independence in 1980. He has announced plans to run again in March next year, but there are hints of political instability. The ruling ZANU-PF party is embroiled in serious fights over who will one day succeed the 93-year-old leader. His party is this month expected to expel one of his trusted top officials accused of secretly setting up structures to replace Mugabe. Pro-opposition political commentator Vince Musewe told VOA there is nothing to celebrate on Tuesday.
This country has gone 30 years backwards. Whether you look at social infrastructure, jobs, you're looking at the quality of life, and it is shocking to actually get a president who can spend time actually talking about what is not there. My fear or my suspicion is that he's no longer aware of what is happening. And number two, he's been fed false information. He did not speak about the cash crisis. He did not speak about the fact of unemployment. And he did not speak, you know, about the issues of food security. I mean, since 1980, everything has deteriorated.
Since last year, Zimbabwe has seen sporadic anti-government protests over the economy and human rights situation. For over a year now, the country is also experiencing a severe cash shortage. People can wait for their money at banks for hours or even days. Economists attribute the shortage to Zimbabwe's dwindling exports and government mismanagement. Zimbabwe abandoned its own currency in 2008 amid hyperinflation. The introduction last year of what the government calls bond notes, which trade on par with the US dollar, has not helped the situation. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says he is alarmed by what he calls a growing, widespread campaign of terror in Burundi being waged by government-backed militia against the opponents of President Pierre Nkurunziza's party. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva for us with this report.
The UN Human Rights Office says a chilling video circulating on social media has laid bare the horrifying and alarming nature of the campaign of terror. Rupert Colville, spokesman for High Commissioner Zeid Ra'ad Al Hussein, says the video shows more than 100 members of the Imbonerakure, the government's youth wing, inciting violence. He says the young men are heard calling for opponents to be impregnated so they can give birth to Imbonerakure or for them to be killed.
These grotesque rape chants by the young men of the Imbonerakure across several provinces across Burundi are deeply alarming. particularly because they confirm what we've been hearing from those who fled Burundi about a campaign of fear and terror by this organized militia.
When the video surfaced, the ruling CNDD-FDD party initially said it was fake and had been filmed outside Burundi. After admitting the footage was real, the party said youths at one rally sang a song that, quote, does not conform to the morals or ideology of the party. However, Colville says the video of this rally, which was released on April 5th, is not an isolated incident, but rather the tip of the iceberg. He says his office has documented 8 large rallies organized across Burundi where similar slogans inciting rape and violence against opponents have been chanted. Colville says senior government officials reportedly have been present at some of these rallies. While the terror campaigns are ongoing, Colville tells VOA rapes, torture, and other serious human rights violations are continuing.
Some of the reports of torture are pretty horrendous. People being burned with hot knives, acid being poured over parts of their body, teeth broken with rifle butts, attacks on sexual organs, etc. So very grisly stuff.
Colville says security forces reportedly have participated in the systematic use of torture. High Commissioner Zaid is calling on the authorities in Burundi to prevent the abhorrent practice and to swiftly condemn the incitement to hatred and violence. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.